Hey, my name is Matthew Tripp, and I've been an emergency medicine physician now for going on 20 years. I've spent the entirety of my career working either in the community setting or in critical access hospitals. And I tell this story because of a couple reasons. This is something that happened to me about 10 years ago when I was working in a critical access three-bed facility that was a long way from anything. And I think I always encourage young docs just coming out of their training or out of residency to really, really consider working in the critical access world, because as an ER doctor, that's really where the rubber meets the road. And we all come out of these sort of level one academic training centers where you have every single subspecialist under the sun, and you have to decide who's on for a mitral valve leaflet surgery, team A, B, or C. And that's just not how the real world works. And I think as emergency physicians, being the sort of jack of all trades, it's really good to push yourself and to go out into these settings where you're really relying on yourself. And these communities need it, and they are extremely grateful. So it's a big plug for working in the critical access setting. And these are like the best settings too, because it's the real nature of community medicine. When you work in a little three-bed ER that's maybe like a six-hour transport flight from anywhere, which is where this particular story happened, because everyone knows each other. Everyone knows who they, the staff knows each other, the staff knows the patients know the staff. And I work in this place, and the clerk is like, "Oh, doc, like I know that guy. I went to high school with him. He smokes ice." And you're like, "Oh, okay, great. That's awesome." And we would work either 24 or 48 hours. And like I said, a three-bed ER, no backup, no ancillary services, and a six-hour fixed-wing flight from any more serious resource. And sometimes on those 24 or 48 hours, like you'd come out in the morning and be like, "Oh my God, that was amazing. Like, what an awesome, like no one came in after 11." And they're like, "Oh yeah, no one. Well, no one except Dennis." And you're like, "Wait, what?" And they're like, "Oh yeah, Dennis. He's the meth head. He lives down the park. I went to elementary school with him. He has the asthma. He came in. He was like, 'Oh, I can't breathe. I can't breathe.' And I was like, 'Dennis, I'm not waking up the doctor for you. I'm going to call your mom and tell her to give her your inhaler.'" And you're like, "Well, you guys didn't like write that down on anything, did you? Right? And maybe you want to call Dennis and just like make sure he's alive." And they're like, "Oh, he's fine. I'll see him later at church." So it's a really unique and amazing practice environment. So I'm working one of these 24-hour shifts, and it's the middle of the night, and I'm down in the call room, dead asleep. And the way it'll work is if someone checks in, the nurses will call you on the phone and you go down to the department and you see them. And the phone rings and I pick it up. And all from the minute I pick it up, all I can hear is screaming on the other end of the phone. And I was like, "Oh God." And I didn't even wait to talk to anyone. I just threw my scrub top on and I ran down to the emergency department. And after 20 years of working in the emergency room, any doc will know that you don't run anywhere. But something was telling me that I needed to get down there. So I get down there. I hadn't realized that my scrub top's actually on backwards, so the whole case is starting off fucked up to begin with. And I come into the department, and there is what appears to be a blood-soaked wild animal in the corner, which turns out to be one of the patients, and the nurses are handing me what appears to be a wet red hamster. And what I've realized is that this unfortunate homeless woman has come in and precipitously delivered a 28-week preemie, basically. And the nurses are just handing it to me with these sort of saucer eyes. And I was like, I was asleep like 2 minutes ago. Like, what is happening? And you can think through and do all the sims you want and this and that, but in that moment, it's like all I could hear was like high-pitched ringing, and there was this like red mist over my eyes. And somewhere in that, it broke through like, well, warm oxygen glucose. And so that's what I did. I took this little wet hamster, and we started warming it, and we started blowing oxygen on it. And everyone kind of jumps in and goes to work. And the mom is still going bananas in the corner. And she's like clawing onto me and pulling onto me and pushing on the nurses. So we just turn around, and I am ketamine that, and she was out of the picture. And I'm like screaming down the hall at the clerk to get the NICU and the referral hospital, which is like 6 hours away on the phone. Meanwhile, we're trying to like dig out the like pediatric resuscitation equipment. The kid's so small, doesn't even fit on the Braslow. So we're just like the smallest tube and, like a zero Miller blade and like a three. Is it cuffed? Is it uncuffed? Who knows? Who cares? Just fucking put it in my hand. And I'm trying to like, intubate this little hamster. And the clerk is yelling down the hall, like, well, the NICU's got questions. And I was like, they have no questions. Tell them to get on the plane and come here. Like, we cannot do anything else. Like, fuck their questions. Tell them to come. And they're like, well, they want you to put an umbilical line in. And it's like, oh my God. Like, so I. Umbilical line, I can't remember. Like, there's two of something, there's one of something else. Like, one of my like zoo animal attendings, which is what I call the academic attendings that you train with. Because, when you get out in the real world, you realize that some of those attendings, like, they're like wild animals that were like actually raised in captivity and they can't actually do anything. And if you release them into the wild, they would die. That's like a lot of your academic attendings. And so, I'm like, okay, get the YouTube on umbilical catheters. And the nurses are getting out their phones and they're trying to like look up umbilical catheters, and we're trying to like skip over the like, truck ad that comes up on the YouTube video, and we can see, oh, okay. And there's an umbilical catheter miraculously like somewhere in the goddamn hospital. And they bring it, and the clerk is like, well, the fellow in the NICU like wants to know. And I'm like, I do not care what they want to know. She asked her like how far we put the catheter in. She's like, if you put it in too far, like, you'll kill them. And like, that's just like, what? So we get a catheter in, and we're getting this kid quasi-stabilized, and the team is coming. And from all of this chaos, like this sense of like, okay, we're turning the corner, we're getting somewhere, and we're gonna get this kid out of here. And the mom at this point starts kind of making some noises and moaning and grunting, and then before I know it, she fucking flops out another one of these hamsters. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And it all starts again. She had twins, didn't know, no prenatal care. I felt like lifting up the leg and being like, how many more are in there? Like, what is going on? And we do the whole thing all over again. And I'll tell you, nothing you do in residency, nothing you do in simulations, anything can prepare you for that moment. And your training and your instincts, they just kick in and you do. And we got them both shipped out. One died. One ended up being pretty severely disabled, but ended up getting adopted out. And so, that's a win. And I tell that story, as I said, not just to encourage people to really, come out and work in the critical access environment and and help and serve these communities that so desperately need it. But in the house of medicine, emergency medicine, like, we don't get a ton of respect, right? And yet, I will tell you that no other specialty can do what we do. No one else can contend with the variables and the chaos and the ability to make decisions and pick a course of action based on such limited information and data. They all want to talk a big game, but there's no fucking way they could operate in that environment. I mean, think about your average like specialist and think about the situation I just told you and see if you could imagine them in there. I mean, you see it all the time. We see it when specialists come down to the ER and start trying to do something and they're totally out of the element. I mean, I saw a vascular surgeon who got called down for a trauma, dissolved into a sweating, farting, mumbling mess when he realized that he wasn't in the OR and we didn't have the equipment he wanted and we didn't have the staff that he wanted. And we were like, and you got to do it anyway, bruh. And he like basically just like fled the department. So for anyone out there in emergency medicine, it's a catchphrase, what you do matters. If you listen to MRAP, you'll hear that all the time, but it's true. And it's true for moments like that because only the ER docs are the ones who are willing to stand at the plate in the face of that darkness of those nights where anything can come through the door and take a swing. And of course, everyone wants to second guess afterwards, but we really truly are what I call the lighthouse of medicine. We are there, we leave the door open, and we leave the light on for whatever is out there, and whatever needs to come in comes in, and we're there to deal with it. And there's very few people, and there's no other specialty that's really willing to do that. And I think, sorry about that. But, you know, that's what really matters. And that's it. That's my story.